And welcome to Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, April 17th. My name is Shona Strausser, and we have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk with Dr. Joanne Gartenberg first about her upcoming stress reduction class. We'll get a preview of Saturday's concert by the Juno Pride Chorus. We'll talk with authors John and Colleen Marsluff about their upcoming presentation at the University of Alaska Southeast. And Nancy DeCherney will be here, as she is every Thursday, with Arts Up, Writer's Almanac, and more here on Juno Afternoon. And first, National Native News.
For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The New Mexico Supreme Court ruled that the Fort Sill Apache will be the 23rd tribe recognized by the state of New Mexico. While government offices for the Apache are located in Oklahoma, in 2011, the federal government designated a reservation for the tribe in southern New Mexico. Members of the Fort Sill Apache descend from ancestors who lived in southern New Mexico but were forcibly removed in the late 1800s. While most tribal members live in Oklahoma, the Fort Sill Apache say nearly 200 tribal members live in New Mexico. Two feather repositories that harvest non-eagle migratory bird feathers have received grants to continue providing ceremonial items for cultural needs. Both the Comanche Nation Ethno-Ornithological Initiative in Oklahoma and the Liberty Wildlife Rehabilitation Foundation in Arizona were awarded funding. Feathers from birds such as hawks or falcons can be obtained through the non-eagle feather repositories, while eagle parts can still be obtained through the National Eagle Repository in Denver. The Department of Interior has offered Macaw Nation landowners about $1.2 million to buy fractionated land under the federal land buyback program. Under the Cabell settlement, just under $2 billion were set aside to consolidate fractionated allotments. The hope is that by purchasing slivers of land owned by multiple family members and securing parcels, they can be opened up to tribes for development. The department says accepted offers have resulted in over $30 million in payments to Indian landowners and about 87,000 acres of land returned to tribes. Macaw landowners have till the end of May to approve the offer. What contributes to happiness in old age? A Harvard study shows the habits we've developed by middle age, such as a stable marriage and a strong network of friends and family, are better indicators of satisfaction at age 80 than wealth or low cholesterol. In the final installment of our series this week on aging in Alaska, KNBA's Jocelyn Estes looked into how Alaska Native elders are cultivating happiness and good health.
University of Washington Assistant Professor Dr. Jordan Lewis says people who feel like they're leaving a legacy or making the world a better place are also happier. For his doctoral dissertation, he surveyed Aleut, Athabascan, and Yupik elders in his home region of Bristol Bay. Lewis says some of them talked about how they overcame alcoholism, survived the death of loved ones, and spent their lives gathering food from nature and practicing cultural traditions. He says elders want to pass on their experience.
Elders, in the research I do now even, talked about if people will just give me the opportunity to share, or I have all this knowledge I want to share, because once I'm gone, the knowledge is gone. Having those opportunities gives them that sense of purpose, promotes their health, and they age better.
Lewis says his research also shows that communities that draw on elders for language, culture, and wisdom are more likely to thrive.
Learning from their elders is really important because it promotes healthy families, healthy communities, and lifts this idea of preserving culture.
Another reason to spend time with elders is that as life expectancy increases, many of us will be traveling the road they're on and would benefit from learning how to live well with joy from retirement into our 80s and beyond. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
During this week in 1990, the Pawnee, Wichita, and Arikara tribes held a reburial ceremony for more than 100 ancestors in Kansas. The site was a tourist attraction, but was returned to the tribes under federal law. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com. National Native News is made possible with support from Guest House Anchorage Inn. Wake up with the sun. On the web at GuestHouseAlaska.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, April 17th. My name is Shona Strasser. And our first guest in the studio today is Dr. Joanne Gartenberg. And she's here to talk about an upcoming stress reduction class at Bartlett Hospital. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Thanks, Shona.
Sure. So let's just go ahead and get some of the just bare details, the bare facts right up front. So this is a stress reduction class. And when does it take place?
It will start next Wednesday evening on April 23rd. The classes run for 8 weeks. It's a 2.5-hour class each week from 6 to 8:30 p.m. held at Bartlett.
And so it's actually a series, really. So do you need to come to every single one, or how does that work?
Well, it's set up like a course, and so it's structured that we would expect you to come to every class. If you know you're going to miss one, you know, that happens to people, life happens, we can provide the information for you that you can continue the learning, the practices that we teach during the class, but we really hope that people will be able to participate in the whole series.
And is there a fee for it, and is there a registration process?
There is registration, and you would register through Bartlett Outpatient Psychiatry, and that phone number is 796-8498. So you do need to register ahead of time. There is a fee for the course as a whole, and we have one fee if you're paying a cash price. We can also, since this is really a health service, we can bill your health insurance, and you would end up paying just a co-payment for each session that you attend.
That's really great. So how do you, you know, if a person is listening, because, you know, we have daily stressors, of course, if a person is listening and they're thinking to themselves, well, I'm stressed out, but I'm really not that stressed out, who is this course for, and, you know, what are the indicators? What would be a good indicator of I'm super stressed out and should probably seek some class?
Well, I'm thinking if you're thinking about it, it's probably for you. It really is for everybody, because we live in a world that places great demands on us. We go at increasing pace. There's no way to avoid stress in our life, but there is a way to learn to respond to the stresses in our lives in ways that are healthier for us mentally, physically, and emotionally. We may know that where we show our stress. We may know that we get anxiety. We may know that we get stomach aches. We may have been told that we have a health condition that has a stress-related component. We may already know that, or we may just have the sense of, I'm just going as fast as I can and I can't keep up.
So there's some major indicators, like you were saying, is that maybe stomach or lack of sleep. Are there some other major clues that people could go, except for self-identifying?
Well, as they say, there's a lot of illnesses that people experience that do have a stress-related component. I'm not saying that by taking this class you'll never be sick again, but people with chronic pain, you can learn better to manage your pain. People with chronic illnesses, living with cancer, hypertension, these classes will give you ways to cope with those illnesses so that you don't actually make things worse but make things better for yourself. The program was developed over 30 years ago by Jon Kabat-Zinn at University of Massachusetts Medical Center, and it was developed for people living with chronic illness and chronic pain as a way to teach them that you are more than your illness, you are more than your pain. You're not cancer, you're not hypertension, you're not chronic pain. You are a person living with that just as you live with all sorts of other attributes. And the idea is there's more right with us than wrong with us, and we have the resources internally to be able to cope with these things. We just sometimes need a little bit direction on how to put those to good use.
So do people, and I say people meaning doctors, of course, do doctors actually see stress as, like a precursor to disease, or kind of a precursor, but also an indicator of, or is it treated as a disease itself?
I'd say all of the above. We actually know through studies that a large proportion of doctor visits and emergency room visits are for conditions that at least have some stress-related component. I mean, the number is phenomenal. It's like 80%. Stress itself, I don't think, is a disease. Stress is a way of life, or stress is life. Life is stressful. But it's really more how we respond to it that causes these damaging manifestations.
Mm-hmm. And if, let's say there were, three major things that you could say, okay, so you have stress in your life, because everybody does, life is stress, what are some maybe three or a couple of ways that people could, right now, actually maybe even at their desk or at their home, kind of combat stress?
Mm-hmm. I think the first way would be to stop and to breathe. And one of the first things we teach is a very simple awareness of breath meditation. And meditation really is just brain training. You're training your brain to pay attention to what you want it to pay attention to. And so by stopping and focusing on your breath, you can do it right now, just put your hand on your belly or your chest or wherever you experience your breath, and just, you don't have to label it. You don't have to try to change it. You don't have to worry about breathing slower or deeper. Just pay attention to your breath. Because even though we think we're multitasking all the time, our brains can't multitask. They can only pay attention to one thing. So if you stop and pay attention to your breath, that's all you're doing at that moment. And if you do it, you'll notice that there is a calming effect, that it's grounding. It's like an anchor. So you have your breath with you all the time. We may not always be aware of it. So stopping and just focusing on your breathing would be a really good practice that you can do several times throughout the day. I think another way is when you get caught up in automatic thoughts, again, to stop, just pay attention to what you're thinking, and then you can ask yourself, do I know this to be true?
What do you mean by automatic thoughts?
Well, a lot of times if something happens, we respond instantly. Say our husband's late for dinner, and all of a sudden we've gone into, he's always late, he's never home, he must be doing this, he doesn't care about my meal, blah, 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 on and on and on. And so by stopping and looking at those thoughts and asking ourselves if they're really true, and we sometimes realize what a silly story we're telling ourselves, and is that the story we want to be telling, or maybe we can make up another story? Sometimes he's just late.
That's great, yeah. So how is the class structured? Is it kind of one of these things that it's participatory? Are there kind of hands-on training, or how does that work?
It's definitely participatory, and it's definitely hands-on training. So throughout the 8 weeks, I teach a variety of meditation practices, like the focus on breath that we just talked about. There's a recorded body scan, which is a guided practice that takes you through paying attention to different parts of your body. There's walking meditation. There's yoga that's taught. We have a yoga teacher who comes to one of the classes and teaches a nice yoga series that then you can practice at home. So in the class, you're taught these practices. You're given an opportunity to practice with a group, and then given an opportunity to discuss your experience. It's not group therapy, so people don't come and usually spill what's happening in their day-to-day lives, but sometimes they need to do that, and we do it in a way that ties it back in to mindfulness. So there's group discussions, and there's some didactic teaching on stress physiology, what stress does to our bodies, how our bodies begin to break down, and then how these techniques actually start to repair our bodies. So it's really, say, it's highly participatory, but it's also, it works well for people who aren't comfortable perhaps speaking up in a group, because they can sit, they can do the practices, and everybody will get something out of it.
So I'm sitting here thinking to myself, oh, well, I'm just too busy. I'm too stressed out to take this class. So, which is ridiculous. So for people like me, could you tell us?
You could ask yourself, do I know this to be true?
Yeah, exactly. I think I will. So could you give us those times and dates one more time?
Yes, it does start next Wednesday, April the 23rd. Normally it runs for 8 weeks in a row. I'll be out of town, so we'll miss the 30th. And then it will pick up in May for the next 7 weeks. We've had enough interest that I think we're going to be able to offer a second class, which will be on Thursdays from 3 o'clock to 5:30 in the afternoon. So that works well for some people who can only attend a daytime class. And that class will start the beginning of May. I believe it's May 8th, the second Thursday in May. I should also mention that as part of the class, in addition to the 8-week weekly classes, there is an all-day retreat that's offered usually between the 6th and 7th class. And that retreat, it's open to everyone who's taking the class, but it's also open to anyone who has ever taken the stress reduction program at Bartlett before. So it's kind of an ongoing benefit you get from having participated in the class. And it's very nice to do the retreat with people who are new to this, but people also who have been practicing the meditation techniques for some time.
That's great. What is the phone number that people need to call to register?
It's at Bartlett Outpatient Psychiatry, and it's 796-8498.
We've been talking to Dr. Joanne Gartenberg about the upcoming stress reduction class. Thank you so much for coming on KTOO Juneau Afternoon.
Thank you.
To Juneau Afternoon. It's Thursday, April 17th. My name is Shona Strasser, and in the studio with me, I have Jennifer Mannix and Maria Davies, and they're here speaking about the upcoming concert with the Juneau Pride Chorus. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Yeah, so the Juneau Pride Chorus has an upcoming show, and thought we'd get some of the details first. And so when is the concert?
The concert is this Saturday night. We have a silent auction happening at 6:30, and the concert actually starts at 7:30 at the Jack.
Oh, it's at the Jack. So that's the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, just right downtown here. And so what is this? This is, can you all do like kind of a fall or winter concert and then also a spring one? So I imagine this is your...
We don't usually do a fall concert. It's usually just one big concert every year sometime in the spring. So this is the big one.
Got it. So what songs are on the agenda this this fine Saturday night?
We have quite a mix, actually. Several a cappella, and when we were rehearsing, I didn't realize we put them all together and, on our dress rehearsal on Tuesday, and we have several a cappella songs that are really neat. We have a few pop songs that people might recognize, Change the World that Eric Clapton sang, Keep Holding On, Avril Lavigne. We have a blessing, like an Irish blessing kind of thing, and so lots of variety.
So,
one more, a gender polka, just to get people's curiosity piqued a little bit.
A gender? I know. I was like, what's a gender polka?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So how do you all choose the selection of your songs? How does that work?
We have a music selection committee that is assembled by volunteers of singers of in the choir who get together a couple weeks before we start practicing, and we just go through some music that our conductor has, and we choose songs that support the PFLAG message and just, support awareness advocacy for LGBT people and their families.
And so is that the main mission of the Pride Chorus?
Absolutely. We're a women's chorus. We're sponsored by PFLAG, which is Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, and that is the main mission of our chorus and PFLAG, so it works well.
Yeah. And so when did your organization get started? And
the Pride Chorus is started in 97. I actually, Marsha Buck is one of our founding members of the Pride Chorus, and she also is heavily involved in PFLAG, which started in 95. So it's been going for a long time with a few different directors, a few different accompanists, but it's a great group.
And Maria, how did you get involved in the choir?
Well, I arrived in Juneau about 7 days before the concert 3 years ago, and I went and saw the concert and was just like, this is something I need to be a part of, and asked if I could join and was welcomed with open arms. So,
well, that's a really interesting thing that you use that term, because I really, every time I do go to a concert, I really do feel like it's a very embracing kind of open arms community. So if people want to get involved, is that something that they could do?
Yes, anybody can come to our fall rehearsals when we start learning the new music, and you can even come in the spring just to hang out with us and listen, because we're very welcoming. I think to actually join the chorus, you don't even have to read music. I'm one of those people who wing it, and you just need to be able to hold your part in the chorus. So.
And there's other ways to get involved, too, because I know it's mostly a female chorus, but I have seen some guys helping out and doing things. Are there other things that need to be done?
Well, yeah, there's actually a group called the Friends of the Juneau Pride Chorus that help do things like fundraising and promotion of our concert. And we do sometimes sing throughout the year when we're invited to other types of events. And we also sometimes have men play music with us. We have a male drummer this year that's going to be playing with us at our concert, and it's not the role that gentlemen play is not singing, but there's always things that can be done. We look forward to having people want to be a part of Friends of Pride.
Yes. So you mentioned there's a band, so there's a drummer, and who's your accompanist?
Jackie Farmsworth is our accompanist, and Leslie Wood is our conductor. We love them. We were just talking about them before we came on here.
Yeah, both really accomplished musicians themselves.
Very much
yeah.
so.
Yeah. yeah. And so you just played Folk Festival as well. Mm-hmm. How was that gig?
I enjoyed it. We had so much fun. We love singing at the Folk Fest. I've done it for the past 3 years since I've been in the choir, but I'm pretty certain they've been doing it for quite a while.
I think at least something around 10 years. It's such a fun time. It's more relaxed, and just we have a great time.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes I've noticed that the Pride Chorus also travels to other states and other places to perform. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, one of our goals with this concert and the silent auction before it is we've traveled the last few years. We've gone to a gala chorus convention in Denver, which is a really large international group of gay and lesbian association of choruses or something. I know that's not the acronym, but also Sister Singers Network. We belong to both organizations, so they have gatherings every 2 years. And so this one, we're trying to go back to Denver next year, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so this fundraiser is actually to help get the whole choir there.
Correct.
Yes.
Because
yes.
There's a lot of people in this choir.
Yes, there are quite a few people in the choir. It changes every season, but it's usually around 30 to 35
yep.
people in the
right
choir.
Wow, that's amazing. Is there a website that people can check out or a Facebook page or something like that?
Thank you for asking that. There's both. JunoPrideChorus.com is our website, and Juno Pride Chorus, we're on Facebook, and we try our best to keep people posted on, like, events and just little tidbits of what we're doing throughout the year on our Facebook page. So it would be a good place to find out information about if we're having a concert, kind of last-minute type thing.
Are there upcoming events? So you've got this concert on Saturday night at the Jack. Are there more events that you see in the future that we could all check out?
The concert in the park.
Yeah. For this season, we have scheduled for sure one more thing. We're going to be doing one of the Food Truck Friday sets. I believe it's the second Saturday, but I don't have the date in front of me.
I think it's June 13th, I believe.
Good job. Yeah. Well done.
Hey, there you go. Mark it on your calendar.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, I love food. Yeah, yeah. Great. Okay. And so could you give us the details about Saturday's show one more time?
I can. So the show starts at 7:30, but we do have the silent auction ahead of time at 6:30. There will be refreshments and appetite or hors d'oeuvre type stuff. The tickets can be purchased either at the Jack or from chorus members, and they're a little bit cheaper in advance. They're $16 in advance for an adult, and they're $18 at the door. There will be tickets available at the door on Saturday at 6:30 or before 7:30.
Great. And a lot of these funds help to actually make sure that you all can travel and do all mm-hmm. the various things that you can do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. We're always looking to, we're fundraising every year for these travel opportunities. They're really a neat experience to grow.
Great.
And to represent Alaska elsewhere.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, because it's a pretty amazing thing that we have such a big Pride Chorus mm-hmm. in such a small town.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. So, well, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this upcoming event on Saturday with the Juno Pride Chorus. If you haven't been to a Juno Pride Chorus show before, you will leave there just with your spirits uplifted. So thank you so much for coming on air.
Thank you so much.
And now a little bit of Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 17th of April, 2014. It's the birthday of the writer who said, "My advice to you is not to inquire why or whither, but just enjoy your ice cream while it is on your plate." Thornton Wilder, born Madison, Wisconsin, 1897, father was a diplomat. Wilder and his four brothers and sisters moved back and forth between Asia and the United States, went to Oberlin, then to Yale, got a job teaching French at a boys' boarding school. In 1926, he spent the summer at McDowell Colony, Writer's Retreat in New Hampshire, and he started work on his new novel, The Bridge of San Luis Rey, set in the 18th century, a story of a bridge that collapses in Lima, Peru, while five people are crossing it. The collapse witnessed by a Franciscan monk who becomes obsessed by it and tries to figure out why those five people had to die. Wilder finished it less than a year later. It was an immediate success, sold nearly 300,000 copies, which enabled him to quit his job and build a house for himself and his parents and his sisters in Hamden, Connecticut, which was his residence for the rest of his life. His plays were popular, especially Our Town and his play The Matchmaker, which was adapted into the musical Hello, Dolly. Somewhere, every day, the play Our Town is being performed by somebody. And Emily says her line, "Oh, Earth, you're too wonderful for anybody to realize you. Do any human beings ever realize life while they live it every minute?" When he was 65, Thornton Wilder, famous writer, comfortable in Connecticut, busy being a literary man, he decided to escape from his own life and got in his Thunderbird convertible, drove west for 10 days. His car broke down in Arizona, just outside of Douglas, Arizona, and he got himself a hotel room, and he stuck around for almost a year and got started on a novel, which came out 4 years later, The Eighth Day, and it won a National Book Award. Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran, Birds and Bees. When my daughter starts asking, I realize I don't know which, if any, birds have penises. I can't picture how swans do it. I'm even confused about bees, that fat queen and her neurotic workers, her children grown in cells. I'm worried by turtles and snakes, their parts hidden in places I have never seen. How do they undress? Long ago, awash in college boyfriends, I knew a little about sex. I understood the dances and calls, the pretty plumage. Now I'm as ignorant as a child. We've gone to the library to find books, though I know sex is too wild for words. The desire to be kissed is the desire to live forever in the mouth of pleasure. My God, I can never tell my daughter the truth. It is a secret, the way spring is a secret, buried in February's fields. It is a secret, the way babies are a secret, hidden by skin or egg, their bodies made of darkness. Birds and Bees by Faith Sheeran from her collection Moving the Piano, published by Stephen F. Austin University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Anchor Bay Entertainment, with Philomena, directed by Stephen Frears and starring Steve Coogan and Judi Dench, on Blu-ray and DVD. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And that was Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac. It's Thursday, April 17th. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. Thanks for tuning in today on KTOO. We have in the studio right now, we have Jonas Lamb, who is actually a librarian at UAS and that does all sorts of really cool events. And he brought to the studio with us two authors from out of town, John and Colleen Marsloff, who have an upcoming presentation both tonight and Friday night, one at one of the local schools and one at the library at UAS, and we'll kind of unpack that here. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Thanks for having us.
So tonight you actually have a presentation. You have two presentations. You're up from Seattle. And I was wondering if you could just kind of fill us in on what tonight's presentation is about.
Sure. So tonight, Colleen and I are both talking about the book we did together called Dog Days, Raven Nights. And as the title implies, it's about dog days and raven nights, mainly what ravens do at night in their roosts, how they share information, kind of some of their basic biology, and then dogs, which I'll let Colleen talk a bit about, but how they helped us out doing our research.
How did that work, Colleen?
Well, we started out with bringing a couple of dogs to Maine with us because we knew we needed help carrying carcasses into the field to do the raven research. And sled dogs are sort of potato chip type things. You can't have just one, you can't have just two, so you need more, and it sort of evolved into a hobby other than research assistants.
Nice.
But they were great assistants, and they certainly helped us carry around all matter of dead animals to the woods.
And so you, this, you know, I read some information about this book and just the experience. Are you all from Maine, or how did you kind of land up there?
No, we were graduate students in Arizona, of all places, and I was just finishing my PhD. And when you get a PhD in biology, you really don't get a job, but you get to do a postdoc, which is the next kind of learning adventure. And for us, that allowed us to go to a new part of the United States, Maine, where we hadn't been, and get to know some super interesting people, friendly people, in a different environment.
And so you're both wildlife biologists. Colleen, what is your – do you have an area of kind of specialty?
Well, I was working with Abert squirrels when I did my master's work, but then I started working for John's advisor, working on Clark's nutcrackers, which are also in the corvid family. And we were doing learning and memory experiments with them in the lab. We didn't have field experiments going on, but the raven stuff sort of combined both. So I sort of evolved from being a squirrel person to a bird person by default from him.
Raven by association.
Yes.
There you go.
And so what was the impetus to start studying ravens?
Well, for me, I was studying jays, a relative of the raven, for my doctoral and master's work. And one thing that intrigued me was the fact that half of the nests that I was watching would get eaten by crows and ravens, take the eggs or take the young. And so that was a neat behavior. I mean, it was frustrating from the standpoint of what I was trying to do, but it was exciting. And just so happened at that time, Bern Heinrich was starting to study ravens in Maine. And so we had known of Bernd and some of his work on insects. He's really an insect physiologist, but really cool stuff. And here was the guy studying the bird that we wanted to study. Nobody else was really studying ravens. And we thought, hey, that's a great mesh. And we were able to combine our interest in those birds and bird behavior with an interesting guy in a new place. And it's kind of the perfect thing for a postdoc. It's what you look for when you finish your degree is a new experience and different, you know, learning environment, different set of mentors, and it was really a great confluence.
So what were some of your discoveries? Because you say dog days and raven nights. How did that all kind of work together, and or not?
Yeah.
It was in hindsight, it's a little bit different than what it was like at the time. But I think that, you know, while we were discovering stuff with the ravens, we were discovering stuff about the dogs, and our interest grew in the dogs just as much as it did with the ravens, because we weren't dog sledding people other than, you know, whatever we kind of muddled our way through. And we can tell stories about that tonight, because there are some really good stories about muddling our way through. But we didn't set out to do this, and so we learned more. We learned a lot about ourselves in the process, living far, far away from any of our relatives and being taken in by another family and just a different culture and people who embraced winter, as you do here, and instead of shunning it, which is mostly what we saw where we grew up. So it's just a different pathway, you know, that we went down that we wouldn't have ever expected. And the same with the raven work. It was a pathway we never, ever would have expected.
Yeah, I mean, we really learned how the ravens basically had to share information to survive in that kind of winter environment where a dead moose pops up here and there, and they all had to share information and then share that feast. And that's not something Darwin would have expected animals to do, right? They should be very selfish. And so as we looked more carefully, yeah, they shared, but they did it for selfish reasons is what we found out. They did it because it paid the individual that was sharing the information just as much as the individuals that were benefiting from that sharing behavior. So it really turned out to be a selfish behavior, what we saw ravens do. But it helped us understand how they survive the winter, how they communicate and what they communicate with one another. And, you know, basically opened up a greater understanding of a kind of mysterious bird at that point.
I'm sure you've been walking around today or seen around town today, and of course you see all of our ravens here, quite a few. Have you had any kind of immediate thoughts about?
I just took a picture of two of them sitting underneath the awning at Salvation Army, and they're sitting on the sign, but under the awning, they're not dumb, they're out of the rain, and it was probably a pair, and they were just having a grand old time, but I told John, they're speaking a language I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a totally different, you know, the vocalizations were very different than ones I've heard in Maine and other places. So.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's very cool, though.
Yeah, you know, I often think that they are the smartest creatures I have ever, you know, they just, their minds are amazing to me.
For sure.
Yeah. So, Jonas, I'm wondering, was that part of the impetus of bringing these authors up is because of how very apropos for Alaska?
Well, I think that was sort of a natural accident that we have quite a lot of crows and ravens up here, then people seem to be fascinated by them. The more real answer to that is that as part of the program that I co-coordinate at UAS, One Campus, One Book, in the fall, which I'm sure you're familiar with, we brought up an author, Kish Johnson, who wrote a fiction collection of short stories that dealt heavily with this fine line between humans and animals and how we understand or misunderstand each other and trying to break through that barrier. She talks a lot about how we have this tendency to try to humanize animals as if they need to be lifted up, as if they weren't, you know, intelligent, knowing creatures in of themselves. So it was a great book, and we had a lot of fun with it, but it wasn't for everyone. And we looked at a way that we might sort of flesh out some of those interesting themes that book dealt with, but from a more scientific, less of a fictional fantasy perspective. And we came upon John's work, and we're really excited that I think the first communication I had with John was a response he had to a quote by Kish, who called, you know, animals these alien intelligences, and John really felt that, you know, they were quite the opposite. He could really relate to them, and we could relate to them as species that have kind of co-evolved. So
yeah.
It was a bit of a reach, but also a bit of a magical connection.
Great. And so tonight you'll be talking about very specifically Dog Days, Raven Nights, and kind of the, because the book seems to actually kind of mirror your journey to Maine as well. So
yes.
Kind of that connection between humans and animals. Yeah. What time is the reading tonight? Or will you be reading as well?
We won't read. We just...
We give a presentation that kind of highlights some of the things in the book. Not enough to give it away so people don't really want to go and read it. But we want them to
read
it.
It is a book for everyone.
Yeah, you're like, please read the book.
Yeah. Oh, we've had people, kids, 10-year-olds read it.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's to excite people about doing science in their own backyard.
Mm-hmm.
What time is the presentation, and where is it at?
So this evening at 7 o'clock at the Juno Douglas High School in the Commons. It's co-sponsored by the Juno Audubon Society, and it'll be John and Colleen together talking sort of behind the scenes of Dog Days, Raven Nights. And then there will be another event tomorrow night out at the UAS Egan Library, and it's also at 7 o'clock. Both events are free. And tomorrow night it'll just be John focusing on his latest book, The Gifts of the Crow, and sort of more of the brain biology and the behavioral ecology that he's observed in that species, and also an incredible array of, like, anecdotes that he's collected, him and Tony collected from around the world. Just
including Juno, yeah.
Everybody's some great got ones a raven from here. Story.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about Gifts of the Crow and what that book entails and your
sure.
process in writing it?
Sure, yeah. Tony and I actually wrote a book prior to that about crows and ravens. And as we would give talks about that book, people would always, it was like, you know, we'd talk for an hour and then it was an hour and a half of questions and testimonies about all the amazing things other people had seen crows and ravens do. So we collected those anecdotes as we went through a couple of years, and we thought, how in the heck do we string these things together? You know, they're all over the place, and some of them are barely believable, and others are like, oh, of course, you know, we've all seen that. And we thought, well, one way to string it together was to really look a little more deeply into the biology of the brain of these birds and really how similar it is to ours, and how that allows them to, you know, kind of use emotion and memory and association to go about solving the problems in their world. And sometimes the way they solve them are very familiar because they're the same way that we solve these problems. So that allowed us to string together these wide-ranging stories from around the world, really, that people told us. And it's fun because everybody wants to read the stories, but as a scientist, I couldn't just lay out, here's all the weird things people saw crows and ravens do. That was the original title, as you saw a crow do what? And then, you know, we thought, well, there's got to be something to hang it on, and that's where the neurobiology kind of came in. And it gets a little heavy in that, but it's one of those kind of reads and talks where you can come back and revisit that information to help you understand more what you might have just seen in your backyard here, especially in Juneau. Gosh, the things you see these birds do, like the ones under the shelter today. And, okay, what was going on in their head? Why might they have done that? It doesn't really have to be thought of as why we would have done it, but what in their brain would have ticked to allow them to make that association? Hey, it's dry under there. Let's go under there. And while we're there, we might as well, you know, communicate about things as well.
You know, it's amazing. I'm sure you'll get tons of stories in the next couple days.
I hope,
here.
Yeah.
And so you said 7 p.m. tomorrow night and then 7 p.m. tonight. And then tonight is at the Juneau Douglas High School.
That's correct.
And then tomorrow night is at the University of Alaska Southeast. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on air with us, John and Colleen Marsloff, talking about their books, Dog Days, Raven Nights, and also Gifts of the Crow. And also, Jonas, thank you so much for bringing these fine folks to town.
Thanks for having us, Jonas.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. 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 People say she's crazy, she got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Well, that's one way to lose walking blues. Diamonds on the soles of your shoes. She was physically forgotten, but then she slipped into my pocket with my car keys. She said, "You've taken me for granted because I please you. Wearing these diamonds." And I could say, "Ooh."
And speaking of diamonds on the soles of her shoes, here's the one, the only Nancy DeCherney, here with RCEP. Hi, Nancy.
I thought those were bunions.
Bunions on the soles of her shoes. Not quite the hottest lyric ever.
Yeah. But we could try it.
Yeah, actually, no, it's a Weird Al song.
Okay, very good. It's an interesting week. We got a couple of major holidays going on, so I think that's kind of slowed things down a little bit, which is nice because I think the weather's going to be fabulous next week. Everybody needs to get their barbecues out and ready to go.
But next week is supposed to be fabulous?
I think so. It's always fabulous the last week in February, in April. So.
I love that.
All right. Today until 5 o'clock, you can go learn about getting your kindergartner registered for next year. So don't let that opportunity pass.
It
just happens all of a sudden. Tonight at 6:30, Reach is having an adult spelling bee. It's a fundraiser. It's over at the Jack. You can register your team of 5 to 7 people, and it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. They've got all kinds of things going on over there.
Are you a good speller, Nancy?
No.
Like, you want to form a team real quick?
No. I mean, unless we would be they have a prize for the other side. It is also at 6:30, the Juno Community Garden Spring Meeting. That's out at Thunder Mountain Library. Time to start getting all your seed packets ready to go. At 7 p.m., you were just talking about the Dog Days Raven Nights, folks. That's happening kind of in several places all over town, it sounds like. There's karaoke night at McGivney's tonight at 9 o'clock, and Goldtown is showing Tim's Vermeer. And they've got other things going on, too, so always check their schedule to see. Tomorrow morning from 8 until 3 p.m. is the Juno Public Blood Drive happening over at Centennial Hall. You can call to schedule a time. Walk-ins are welcome. It is, of course, free. Noon's the organ concert. There is a professional writing workshop, Writing for the Workplace, at Centennial Hall at noon also. Tell me about this Lend Me a Tenor thing.
Lend Me a Tenor is a farce. There's 6 doors. We slam them a lot. it's part of the UA, University of Alaska Southeast, production class. And so all the students are the actors. They're the designers. They're the everything. And they're fabulous. We have a show tomorrow night at 7:30. We have a show Saturday at 2, Saturday night at 7:30, and a closing show on Easter, because who doesn't want to get a good chuckle on Easter?
Yeah, you need that.
Yeah.
And let's see, the Canvas movie night is Friday night at 6 p.m. They're showing Spy Kids, and that's free, and you get popcorn, too. Woosh Kanadei is having an April showcase fundraiser at the Rookery. I believe it's sold out, but you can always go and whine at the door and see if somebody failed to show. So it sounds like it's going to be absolutely fabulous and a great thing to be doing. Sigla is having their Friday night social at Jaded Lounge at 6 p.m. And at 6:30, there is the Relay for Life wine and beer tasting at the Jack. It's $25. You can get your tickets in the usual suspect spots. Space Trucker Bruce, a benefit showing for the Marie Drake Planetarium, is happening at 7 o'clock on Friday. We got Dan Hobson, a live guitar in the Gold Room at 7. And at 7:30 p.m., it is the PFLAG Juno Pride Chorus annual concert at the Jack also. You can get the tickets at the door. I think they're also online, so you can do that, too. And at 9 p.m., the second annual Juno Bunny Bar Hop.
Oh, it's back.
Well, it's back. Yeah. It's been a year.
Oh, right, right.
You start at the Triangle Club, and you need to be 21 or older, of course. So let's see. On Saturday morning at 10 a.m., it's a Convention and Visitors Bureau volunteer info session at the Baranoff. At 10 a.m., the Roller Girls are having a carnival fundraiser at the Jack. It sounds like such fun, from 10 until 2 p.m. So
this is Sunday or Saturday?
That's Saturday.
Okay.
At 1 p.m., the Empty Chair Project is having origami crane folding party at the City Museum as part of that project. So if you've always wondered how to do that, now's your opportunity. It's free. Go on up and do that. As you mentioned, there's the Lend Me a Tenor thing happening out at University, and there's comic drawing at Alaska Robotics, and there's Dan at the Gold Room on Sunday. It's Easter and Passover. There'll be a lot of eggs involved. So you might as well, like, I think this could be nice. Just go outside, play.
Just do that.
Just do that. Visit with some friends, for heaven's sakes. that's kind of a nice afternoon to do that. Monday, let's see, there's a Goldtown No Evidence of Disease is a film screening. It's free, and it's sponsored by the Cancer Connection over at the Goldtown. On Tuesday at 5:30, the 4th of July, Douglas 4th of July people are having a planning session. The Douglas 4th of July is always such fun, and both of the 4th of July groups can use help. So if you want to volunteer for something, this is something to get involved in.
Yeah, the Douglas, I mean, you get sandcastles, you get dog frisbee catching.
Hoses.
Fire hoses and firemen. Hello. Volunteer when you can. You know, I've often tried to get my dog involved in the thing, but yeah. He just won't drop it. He'll catch it. He's awesome.
He's not going to share his toys.
No, he's going to take it over to some other dog.
Okay. Wednesday is a really fun thing that the I think the Juno Douglas Little Theater is doing at 5:30 at the Silver Bow. It is a Shakespeare monologue competition. Are you going to enter?
I'm dusting off. I'm dusting off some old...
Brush off your Shakespeare. Isn't that a song?
I think so. I think it's brush up.
Brush up,
I'm
going
to brush it off, though. I'm doing ones that I can't do anymore because I've aged out of them.
Ah, yes. I hate that part. If you haven't at all. And at 7 p.m. over at the Red Dog Saloon, it's the old-time string band jam. Everybody's welcome to come on over there. There is, let's see, next Thursday, we'll just go on to next Thursday. What the heck? Oh, no, we have to mention the Alaska State Improv Festival As If begins on Thursday and goes through the weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty cool. Eric Caldwell brings up all sorts of cool
people.
Yeah.
Amazing people. And each show for the festival is different. It has a different set of people. And because it's improv, it's always different. So you can buy festival passes. It takes place over at McFeeters Hall. So take this opportunity. I mean, it's unique and fun.
Yeah, totally.
Different.
Check it out, As If.
As If.
I know, I love it. I just want to say that over and over again. Hey, Nancy, what's going on over at the Jack these days?
Well, my goodness sakes, we have been working hard on the WAC project. Of
WAC.
Course,
what is that?
WAC project. Oh, come on.
It's WAC.
The Willoughby Arts Complex, where Perseverance Theater and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council are working on that sort of stuff. We have been planning our season for the coming year and some really, well, of course, and there's Chick Corea coming up at the end of the month. We're down to 40 tickets. So I thought we'd sell out, but you still have an opportunity to sit in the nosebleed section if you'd like.
It's at JD, right?
It's at JD. It's Chick Corea and Bela Fleck, and I think it's just the two of them. They've been touring this. You can see it on YouTube. Amazing opportunity to see these really prestigious artists. And then Jazz and Classics is gearing up, of course. So we've got that. We're starting to get geared up for Food Truck Fridays and all that sort of stuff that's going on.
Where's Food Truck Friday? Where's that going to hang out? How's that working?
It's going to be on the lawn, and it's going to overlap with the Perseverance Summerfest. It's going to be usually wild chaos over at the Jack all summer long, where Perseverance will be doing three different plays. They will be doing The Blue Bear. They will be doing a play that David Hunsaker is writing called Warriors. And then Vanya, you'll have to remind me, there's Sasha
and Sonya and Masha and Spike.
Yes,
there you go.
Which is a comedy. And they'll be doing those at least one day each week that you see all three of them. So basically there's two a day set for Wednesdays. And intermixed with that, we'll be doing the Food Truck Fridays on Friday night. So it's just going to be fun, fun, fun.
And so people will be performing for Food Truck Fridays too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So will that be on the lawn? Will that be?
It depends on the weather. What we worked out with Perseverance Theater is they will set up for the play that will follow Food Truck Fridays and will perform on the stage. I don't know if anybody realized last year we were performing on the sets of many weddings.
You're like, oh, I thought all this was for me.
Yes. It was actually a wedding that was set up, and then they moved in after we moved out. It's going to be a really interesting and fun summer. A lot of different changes going on, and I'm looking forward to all of that. There's a training that would be really good around this time that you can get to learn the history of Juno and that sort of thing. If you're thinking about volunteering at the museum, the City Museum, or for the Visitors Association, look up their training times. The first ship comes in May 1st.
Whoa.
It's that time.
I'm not ready for that.
Well, you'll just have to get ready.
Yeah, it's like, too bad. Too bad for
yes,
you.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, let's see if I can remember what we're coming up with for the season. We're bringing the United Kingdom Ukulele Orchestra first. Go on to YouTube and listen to them doing Walk Like an Egyptian. It's very fun.
Oh, that makes me happy.
Yeah, we're bringing quite a few. The Hawaiian Poet Laureate will be coming.
Wow.
Kealoha. The season is going to be pretty exciting. We'll be releasing it shortly.
That's so cool. And where you can find out this season and the calendars, of course, Ms. Nancy?
At jahc.org or at ktoo.org.
Ms. DeJourney, always a pleasure here with Arts Up. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And this is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Ock Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoona, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. Make sure you tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. Friday and get all the upcoming information.